on this fourth day of April, 2011, in San Diego. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized, Text Number 3. Klabhyam Asmakamakpata Naitatvayupapadyate Chudrangriyadavabalyam Chakpotishta Parantapa. O son of Pita, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. Purport. Arjuna was addressed as the son of Pita, who happened to be the sister of Krishna's father, Vasudev. Therefore, Arjuna had a blood relationship with Krishna. If the son of a Kshatriya declines to fight, he is a Kshatriya in name only. And if the son of a Brahman acts impiously, he is a Brahman in name only. Such Kshatriyas and Brahmins are unworthy sons of their fathers. Therefore, Krishna did not want Arjuna to become an unworthy son of a Kshatriya. Arjuna was the most intimate friend of Krishna, and Krishna was directly guiding him on the chariot. But in spite of all these credits, if Arjuna abandoned the battle, he would be committing an infamous act. Therefore, Krishna said that such an attitude in Arjuna did not fit his personality. Arjuna might argue that he would give up the battle on the grounds of his magnanimous attitude for the most respectable Bhishma and his relatives. But Krishna considered that sort of magnanimity mere weakness of heart. Such false magnanimity was not approved by any authority. Therefore, such magnanimity or so-called nonviolence should be given up by persons like Arjuna under the direct guidance of Krishna. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unminatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Paramahansa. So, this whole first part of the second chapter is kind of a culmination of the first chapter. Arjuna has laid out his argument for not fighting, that it will destroy the all of these men, and the women will be unprotected, and therefore there'll be Varnasankara. That's one of the main arguments. And Varnasankara means unwanted population, population that's not trained properly, and therefore it creates hellish condition on earth. A sin will also be incurred by myself, Arjuna is saying, and also by those whose family traditions are destroyed. This whole idea of the husbands have to be there to offer the pinda, to offer to the Pitris to, you know, get rid of, to help them get free of their sins. Also, the main reason, you know, his gut reaction, he didn't want to kill or be responsible for the death of Bhishma and Drona and other exalted personalities. He had blood ties, in-law ties to so many of the opposing party. And so now he's... He continues with this. Krishna now speaks to him, and these two verses that he speaks, 2 and 3, they're not really transcendental instructions. He's speaking on the basis of a friend. The charioteer in general is supposed to try to encourage the warrior on the chariot and protect him. And so this is pure Kshatriya talk. How have these impurities come upon you in the last verse, at the moment of battle? This is not befitting an Aryan. He's trying to goad him, because Kshatriyas are very, generally, you know, very sensitive to insult, or to the threat of infamy or loss of respectability. And this is what Krishna says, is that this will bring akirti, it will bring infamy to you. It is impotence, which is, you know, like a really... a big insult to a Kshatriya, because their whole thing is to be very powerful, to fight against the enemy. Arjuna was certainly a Maharati, he could fight with 1,000 opponents. And here he said, how has this impotence come upon you? It doesn't befit you. Prabhupada points out from the commentaries that he addresses him as Partha, indicating his exalted bloodline from his mother's side, and on his father's side, he's the son of Indra, you know. That's also understood. So he said, get up and fight. Chuck, give it up. Give up this Ridhiya Dauboliam. Now, Ridhiya Dauboliam is an interesting word because that's also mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur as an impediment to the practice of bhakti. We're also kind of on a battlefield, you know, as aspiring devotees. And we have so many enemies that we have to fight. The main enemy is the internal enemy of material desire. Krishna says at the end of chapter 3, what's the real enemy? And, you know, when he gets into his transcendental instructions, it's really lust, it's material desire. And this enemy captures the strategic points in your being, your senses, your mind, your intelligence, and your knowledge is covered, and you act in a way contrary to your best interests, you know, which is what an enemy does. He brings you under control. So the same word is used. But here, Ridhiya Dauboliam, of course, means weakness of heart in this fighting, this battle that's about to take place. So they're speaking man to man, you know, Kshatriya to Kshatriya, friend to friend here. And this doesn't work. Arjun will come right back at him and, you know, tell him, no, I don't, you know, you may call me weak or impotent, but it's not going to sway me. That kind of argument is not going to sway me. So as Prabhupada points out, if Arjun is to be known as a Kshatriya, he's going to keep his fame, then he's going to have to buck up and fight. But that's not enough of an impetus for him to fight. He doesn't care. He's already declared that he's going to go to the forest and beg, or he's going to declare that in a few verses. So he needs something more, and that something more is the rest of the Bhagavad Gita, to actually bring him around to his actual identity, not as a Kshatriya or anything else, but simply as a servant of Krishna. Because Krishna wants it, therefore he has to discard all of the material desires, even the desire to see his relatives and friends and guru and grandfather alive. That's a material desire. So that's what we'll find out soon. Any comments on this verse? All right, let's go on. Arjuna Vacha. Katam Bhishmam Mahang Sankhye Dronam Cha Madhusudana Ishubhi Pratiyotsyami Pujarha Vadisudana. Arjun said, O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counterattack with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona, who are worthy of my worship? Purport. Respectable superiors like Bhishma, the grandfather, and Dronacharya, the teacher, are always worshipable. Even if they attack, they should not be counterattacked. It is general etiquette that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. Even if they are sometimes harsh in behavior, they should not be harshly treated. Then, how is it possible for Arjuna to counterattack them? Would Krishna ever attack his own grandfather, Ugrasena, or his teacher, Sandipani Muni? These were some of the arguments offered by Arjuna to Krishna. So, this is very illustrative, because factually this battle will take place transcendental to all the normal rules and regulations. They follow the battle normally, but because Krishna is on the battlefield, various things happen that are against the ordinary course of events. Even Krishna will break his promise not to fight. That's one thing that happens, because Bhishma forces him to get off, you know, to do that when he threatens Arjuna. And these rules that are normally there, you know, you don't offer even a verbal counterattack, what to speak of shooting them with arrows, to your superiors like Dronacharya. Dronacharya was his teacher. You know, you worship your teacher. If you do anything for the teacher. And here he was on the other side. So this is by way of showing the ultimate authority of Krishna in setting dharma, in setting what is right and what is wrong. Because Krishna says to do it, therefore it's right. Even though it seems to counteract, or seems to contradict, rather, some other formularies. Those are all subordinate to the ultimate desire of Krishna. And we sometimes face that also. Like, for instance, you know, young men will join. I was pretty young when I joined, not as young as you guys. Well, maybe Ryan. Ryan's a little older. But, you know, the common thing is, oh, what about the education? You know, they have to get an education, you know, in the school and university, universally taught. And so the parents generally freak out, you know, oftentimes, at least in my day. It seems like the wrong thing. They would come and see Prabhupada. What have you done with my son? You've taken my son. You know what's going to happen. And also, there's the element of how, you know, the sons are supposed to take care of the parents, right? What's going to happen to me? You know, of course, in America, supposedly have Social Security and everything, but that's a big thing. So it seems to contradict the ordinary right and wrong of society to have this ashram situation, you know, where someone gives up everything, they kind of contradict the ordinary course of what is thought to be right and wrong in society. But because it's for the cause of Krishna, and Krishna will say in the 18th chapter, and this is kind of a critical, even if you kill someone, but it's not out of ego, it's out of the higher order, you're not punishable. And it's just like, you know, someone goes to war under the government order, and he kills, he's given a medal, the more enemy he kills. He comes back and does the same exact thing for his own aggrandizement, and he, you know, gets arrested and put in jail. So, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. This is in the, is it Yamaraj's, is Yamaraj's teachings? Yes, at the Yamaraj's teachings, when he's talking about the Mahajans, you know, who is it that really knows what Sanatana Dharma is? And it's these 12 Mahajans, one of whom is Bhishma, interestingly enough. But it is Krishna who sets that Dharma. He's the one who enunciates Dharma. And, you know, knowing that, that becomes our shelter. Because in this world, you have to fight, trying to figure out what to do and what not to do. That's what this whole Bhagavad Gita is about. And sometimes your senses, your mind, your intelligence is telling you to do one thing, and that but there's, you know, Krishna and the Shastra, you know, are telling you to do another thing. And that's where you have to make, that's the hard part, to make that decision. To go against what your senses are telling you, especially if you have a philosophy behind it. You know, basically you have to give up. You know, surrender really means to give up your misconceptions. To give up all the things you thought you knew. A few Sundays ago, I gave this lecture based on a statement by, I think it was Mark Twain. Yeah, that it's not so much what you don't know that the problem is, but it's what you know for sure that just ain't so. You know what I mean? Your strong convictions that are wrong. There's so many things we don't know anything about, and that can cause a problem too. But worse problem is when you're absolutely certain about something that is false, such as, I'm this body. I'm an American, I'm male, female, old, young. That's, you know, people will get in your face if you try to deny that. They're so attached to their ethnicity, who they, you know, supposedly are, family, tradition. It's all a dream. And that's what's being challenged here. You know, is that your ties to your family, to your guru, everything, that's all out the window when Krishna gives a contradictory order. And that's the stark reality being spoken of here. Okay, so now Arjun will kind of reach a crescendo here in his argument, these next couple of verses, and then he surrenders to Krishna. Guru nahat vahi mahano bhavan Shreyo bhoktum bhaikshyam apiha loke Hatvata kamans tu guru nihaiva Punjiya bhogan hrudira pratignan. It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. Report. According to scriptural codes, a teacher who engages in an abominable action and has lost his sense of discrimination is fit to be abandoned. Bhishma and Drona were obliged to take the side of Duryodhana because of his financial assistance, although they should not have accepted such a position simply on financial considerations. Under the circumstances, they have lost the respectability of teachers. But Arjuna thinks that nevertheless they remain his superiors, and therefore to enjoy material profits after killing them would mean to enjoy spoils tainted with blood. So he's thinking, well, look, they may have made their decision on the basis of financial gain, but why should I make my decision on the basis of winning a kingdom? In other words, he's forgotten, he's putting in the background the idea of, well, this is to reestablish Dharma in the person of Yudhishthira and all that. He's just thinking, well, we're fighting over a kingdom. You know, they stole the kingdom, we want the kingdom. And their consideration was for money. And what how am I any different? You know? And plus, you know, he will say, what's the point of getting this kingdom if those who I want to enjoy it with are now dead? You know? It'll be worse than... better I go to the forest. You know, he's actually making this calculation. And it's a right calculation on the basis of simply material things. You know, Arjun, the devotee, is not interested in, you know, being a big king and enjoying these things. He'd much rather see his teacher alive. You know, the horror of killing his teacher at this point is blocking his vision of anything beyond that. So he's making this this appeal here, and he'll go on similar vein. Yeah.
So Bhishma and Drona are pure devotees, aren't they? So why did they?
Well, Drona isn't mentioned as a pure devotee. Bhishma definitely. And you know, the only way we can calculate this is the same way in which Arjun is now on the in illusion. It's all, you know, Krishna puts them in temporary illusion for the greater. He's like a impresario or a director of a play, you know. Bhishma never really loses his devotion. That comes out so clearly in his prayers, you know, at the end in the Bhagavatam. He always was a devotee of Krishna, and they had this incredible rasa. Where, you know, he attacks Krishna and he's being pierced by the arrows, apparently, you know, by Bhishma. And he's enjoying that. He's enjoying being, you know, fighting with Bhishma. So, you know, who can conceive of how these things are going on? So it's just a question of being covered in order to arrange. Because if Bhishma didn't go on the other side, I mean, would Duryodhana actually have an army? I mean, Bhishma was the big general and arranging the whole thing, you know. So it was that had to happen in order, you know. It's just like Jarasand, you know. There has to be some mechanism of annihilating, you know, getting rid of all these demons that are on the earth. So these big armies, you know, so they get killed in the presence of Krishna, thousands and thousands of them. So in order for this battle to take place and Krishna to have a big cleanse, you know, Bhishma had to be on the other side. But he never lost his real devotion.
So the whole purpose of the battle then was to annihilate demons.
Vinashaya Chudushkritam. That's part of it, yeah. And the other is to reestablish Dharma.
Well, but the Dharma wouldn't have been unestablished if it weren't for Bhishma and Drona unestablishing it under the...
Not necessarily. There's plenty of other demons, too. There was, you know, this was the culmination of Krishna's lila doing that. You know, the Jarasandha was a big demon, the Kamsa was a big demon, they all had armies and everything. And, you know, you can also look at how Duryodhana, how did he learn how to fight with a club? Balaram trained him. Where does that come in? It's very inconceivable where the loyalties lie and how the whole thing takes place. But the ultimate result of it all is that, you know, that Duryodhana is an, you know, they're purified, they're killed in the presence of Krishna. It's very painful for everybody. Yudhisthira is distraught after the whole thing. He's, you know, everybody died. He needs to get, you know, therapy, if you will, from Bhishma, get preached to and brought up. And so it's, you know, there's a lot of levels to it, inconceivable. But it's very dramatic. I mean, this is setting up that we can relate to. You know, the basic idea is that our gut reaction, you know, is rarely the right way to is rarely the Krishna conscious way. You know, until we become spontaneous devotees, then what you feel is right. But until then, it's conditioned by the modes of nature and preconceptions and all kinds of illusions. So you have to kind of give that up, and Arjun will do that in a couple of verses. Okay, did we do? We didn't do six yet. The Chaitan Vinma Katarano Gariyo. Yadvajayema Yadivano Jayeyu. Yane Mahatvan Jijivishamas. Tevastitha Pamukhe Dhartarastra. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we killed the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. Purport, Arjuna did not know whether he should fight and risk unnecessary violence, although fighting is the duty of the Kshatriyas, or whether he should refrain and live by begging. If he did not conquer the enemy, begging would be his only means of subsistence. Nor is there a certainty of victory, because either side might emerge victorious. Even if victory awaited them, and their cause was justified, still, if the sons of Dhritarashtra died in battle, it would be very difficult to live in their absence. Under the circumstances, that would be another kind of defeat for them. All these considerations by Arjuna definitely prove that not only was he a great devotee of the Lord, but he was also highly enlightened and had complete control over his mind and senses. His desire to live by begging, although he was born in the royal household, is another sign of detachment. He was truly virtuous, as these qualities combined with his faith in the words of the instruction of Sri Krishna, his spiritual master, indicate. It is concluded that Arjuna was quite fit for liberation. Unless the senses are controlled, there is no chance of elevation to the platform of knowledge, and without knowledge and devotion, there is no chance of liberation. Arjuna was competent in all these attributes, over and above his enormous attributes in his material relationships. So, just going to the verse, you can see that there's no way that a Kshatriya can fight in a battle if he's not sure whether he should win or the other party should win. You have to be really convinced that you want to win. You know, so clearly he's completely paralyzed here. And this concern for the son of Dhritarashtra, just imagine the context of this. Now, you know, here's Duryodhana, and Dushasana was also one of the sons, right, Varun?
Yeah.
Yeah, and here's Dushasana, who tried to disrobe his wife. You know, Bhishma had vowed to kill all of them. Bhima has vowed to kill all of them, you know, after he saw that, you know. And he did. But Arjuna now is saying in this verse, if we kill the son, that we could not care to live. So what a soft time. Forgiveness. You know, this is a high, you know, very highly coveted quality of a Vaishnava, to forgive, Chama. He's clearly in that mode. But it's kind of, you know, the improper mood to be in at this point in time. So he's completely conflicted here. He's completely conflicted. You know, I don't know who better to conquer or be conquered. Obviously, he can't fight in the battle with that kind of mentality. And so he's expressing his complete paralysis in this verse. I want to see them alive. If I kill them, then I can't bear to live. So then, you know, the only logical thing is to go off to the battlefield and to live by begging. Now, one important aspect of the Bhagavad Gita you'll find is that in the 11th chapter, Krishna says they're already dead. They're already killed by me. You can be an instrument in the fight. You may go to beg or not, but they're still going to die. So that's an important consideration when we understand that Krishna's will, you know, thy will be done. You know, it says in that prayer, right? Give us this day our daily, thy will be done. So Krishna's will be done. There's no question about it. Our only option is whether we're going to fight that will, or be indifferent to it, or work with it, or be part of Krishna, you know, surrender to Krishna. That's our choice. So when Arjuna understands that, he'll finally say, Kadashe Vachanaktava, I will do as you say. But right now, he's kind of setting the scene for the Bhagavad Gita to be spoken, to bring him around to his right consciousness. Okay, now the next verse is key. This is a key verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Karpanya dosho pahata svabhava Prachami tvam dharma sambuddha cheta Yakshe yaksyam nishtitam bruhitan me Shishyaste haṁ śādi māṁ tvāṁ papannam. Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Purport. By nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. In every step there is perplexity, and therefore it behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. All Vedic literatures advise us to approach a bona fide spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life, which happen without our desire. They are like a forest fire that somehow blazes without being set by anyone. Similarly, the world situation is such that perplexities of life automatically appear without our wanting such confusion. No one wants fire, yet it takes place, and we become perplexed. The Vedic wisdom therefore advises that in order to solve the perplexities of life and to understand the science of the solution, one must approach a spiritual master who is in the disciplic succession. A person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. One should not, therefore, remain in material perplexities, but should approach a spiritual master. This is the purport of this verse. Who is the man in material perplexities? It is he who does not understand the problems of life. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.8.10, the perplexed man is described as follows. Yova eta rakshanam gar gavidit vasma lokat praiti sakripanaha. He is a miserly man. Notice this word kripana. This is the first verse of the first word of the verse. Karpanya is the same idea. Kripana is the person who is beset by karpanya, miserliness. He is a miserly man who does not solve the problems of life as a human, and who thus quits this world like the cats and dogs without understanding the science of self-realization. This human form of life is a most valuable asset for the living entity, who can utilize it for solving the problems of life. Therefore, one who does not utilize this opportunity properly is a miser. On the other hand, there is the Brahman, or he who is intelligent enough to utilize this body to solve all the problems of life. Yaitad akshanam gargi vidit vasma lokat praiti sabrahmanaha. The kripanas, or miserly persons, waste their time in being overly affectionate for family, society, country, etc., in the material conception of life. One is often attached to family life, namely to wife, children, and other members, on the basis of skin disease. The kripana thinks that he is able to protect his family members from death, or the kripana thinks that his family or society can save him from the verge of death. Such family attachment can be found even in the lower animals, who take care of children also. Being intelligent, Arjun could understand that his affection for family members and his wish to protect them from death were the causes of his perplexities. Although he could understand that his duty to fight was awaiting him, still, on account of miserly weakness, he could not discharge the duties. He is therefore asking Lord Krishna, the Supreme Spiritual Master, to make a definite solution. He offers himself to Krishna as a disciple. He wants to stop friendly talks. Talks between the master and the disciple are serious, and now Arjun wants to talk very seriously about the recognized spiritual master. Krishna is therefore the original spiritual master of the science of Bhagavad Gita, and Arjun is the first disciple for understanding the Gita. How Arjun understands the Bhagavad Gita is stated in the Gita itself, and yet foolish mundane scholars explain that one need not submit to Krishna as a person, but to, quote, the unborn within Krishna. There is no difference between Krishna's within and without, and one who has no sense of this understanding is the greatest fool in trying to understand Bhagavad Gita. There's a little swipe at Dr. Radha Krishnan. Okay, so this is a key verse in the Bhagavad Gita because it's where Arjun surrenders. He changes his whole approach here. Instead of giving his own idea, you know, why he doesn't want to fight and why he's not going to fight, and arguing from the basis of the Vedas, and dealing with Krishna as a friend and an equal rather than his superior spiritual master, he's now surrendering to him. You know, he's now in the proper position. It's a key verse because it's the model of what each of us should do. And Prabhupada makes that very clear. So this idea, first of all, the perplexities, is, you know, dharma samudha cheta. This is a key phrase. It means I'm bewildered, my conscience is bewildered about what to do and what not to do. That's basically what dharma is. You know, to act in such a way for our ultimate benefit. Shreya. So he's not sure what Shreya is. Now the word karpanya, of course, is defined nicely here in this quote from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Who is a kripana? Now kripana means many things. It means a wretch. You know, it means someone who really has no protection and who is this idea of miser. Not properly utilizing the wealth that you have. And the greatest wealth that we have is just the human form of life, you know. And it's not permanent, you know. The clock is ticking, and if we don't use it properly, we could very well lose it. So the proper use of the human form of life is to inquire into the solutions to all the problems of life. The general default position, both in the animal and the human life, is to try to solve your immediate problems as best you can understand. Right? Now in the human life, we can look ahead. We can see that, 10, 20, 30 years, and even they plan for the next 100 years. You know, this is the whole thing with the global warming. So what are we doing, is that we're heating up this planet. Look what's going to happen, and already it's going on. And then, so that's long-range planning. People are thinking, maybe not even, I might not suffer. I'm 50, 60 years old, some scientist. But my children, my children's children, the planet, And other people are saying, who cares? I'm going to drive my car. I'm going to burn the gasoline. So there's this conflict. Prayas and Shreyas. Even on the material level, there's a kind of Shreyas. And Prayas means immediate gratification. Shreyas means the ultimate good. You see. So for Arjuna, the Prayas is the immediate gratification to see his teacher and his friends and everybody alive. That he's thinking. But the Shreya, which he mentions in this verse, is the ultimate good for myself and for everyone else. And for that, he says, I don't know. I really don't know. I'm going to stop speculating and surrender to you. Now, how do we get out of this perplexity? The perplexity arises when we come up with a solution to either an immediate problem or a long-range problem, and then we find that it doesn't work or it's temporary or other problems come and our temporary solution didn't work. This situation in Japan, how are you going to, find a solution to that? They thought they had it. Now, Japan knew about, earthquakes. They planned that. They had all these problems. Give me 2 minutes to, the history of Japan since World War II. So they have this society where they're very intelligent, they're together, they work together, and they're coming off the mat of World War II, And so, the Japanese miracle. They became one of the most powerful economies in the world. At a certain point in the 80s, they were predicting about Japan what they're now saying about China, that they're going to overtake the United States. They were selling so many cars, the Toyotas, the Hondas and everything, the much better cars, And everything else, they bought, what did they buy, Rockefeller Center at one point? This was serious business, this billion, that billion. And meanwhile, how do we run this technological society that we have? We're building up all of these things. We don't have any oil. We have to import it. Okay, we'll go nuclear. 30% of their electricity they built up in nuclear power plants. So there's obviously a formula for some problem. They got an island nation there that's always getting these earthquakes, and now you're going to build the nuclear.
Which
you
can put it right on the
shore. Yeah. Well, it has to be cooled. So that's natural. We have our own San Onofre.
Yeah.
So, but they still did it. They thought they had it under control. They hired GE to, build it. So, they said, okay, no problem. If it's 7.2, we got it figured out. 6.8, they got people who paid big money, the computers figured out, we'll be able to. But there was a nine, they can't predict that. They can't plan for that. And the tsunami came 10, 15 minutes later. And now it's a huge problem, And so now they're in perplexity, what to do, how to fix it.
They did not calculate tsunami. Only earthquake came. They had these backup generators which will generate.
Right. If the tsunami had
power to push the water.
Yeah, but we know when a big earthquake happens in the ocean.
Came and destroyed those backup.
Yeah, but the point was is that with all of their plans, with all of their plans, just like Hiranyakashipu. he planned. He figured. He had it figured out. I won't be killed in the day and the night. I won't be killed by animal, mineral, vegetable. He had the whole thing planned up in the sky. But Krishna was Prabhupada's great lecture. He compares it to Mother Yashoda, how she was binding Krishna, and she's always 2 inches too short. So Krishna is always a little bit more intelligent than you are. He always has the edge. So the point is, the material energy is working under his control. And you cannot outwit the material energy. It's duratya. It's impossible to cross over or win in the battle with the material energy. Eventually, just time. We're reading tomorrow, we're going to read the verse in the Bhagavatam. Dachtam janam sampatitam vilesmin kala hina Chunda Sukodu Tarsham. This is Uddhava painting a picture. You know, he's taking the role of a conditioned soul. And he's saying, you know, very graphic, wonderful poet. He says, I've been bitten by the snake of time, you know, and I've fallen into this bile, like a snake hole or a deep hole of a material world. But I'm still maintaining this strong desire for insignificant sense gratification. Chudra Sukodu Tarsham. And so he's praying to Krishna, who's in the middle of the Uddhava Gita, to please deliver me by raining down your nectarian words, you know, and giving me this nectar, which is Amrita, which is deathless nectar, you know. So it's just like that. Just as Uddhava was learning from Krishna, Arjuna's learning from Krishna. This is very parallel. There's many of the same instructions. So by this instruction of the guru, or who can be Krishna himself, or the representative of Krishna, speaking the same words, we can know for certain how to attain our ultimate good. What is that word, that verse? Chasmat gurum papadeja jigyashu shreya uttama. The shreya word is here. You have to approach the guru if you want to know, if you're curious about understanding the highest good. And who is the guru? Shabde parecha nishnatam bhammanupashamashim. One who is completely absorbed in Brahman, the Supreme Brahman, Krishna, by having heard the Shastra. Shabde pare chanishnatam, fixed in transcendence. You know, Brahman Dupa Shamashim, and who is at the right hand of God, as they say. You know, or Krishna himself, who could be a better guru? He's the Adi Guru. So now Arjuna has changed his attitude, and he's going to receive the knowledge. As soon as he changes his attitude, the knowledge flows. Krishna changes his attitude, and he chastises him. So he's speaking learned words, but you don't know what you're talking about. And that's the first instruction in text 11, as we see. So one thing about this word shishya, Prabhupada gave a nice explanation. You know, every Sanskrit word has a root. And to understand what the word means, you have to understand the root. And the word of this shishya is shas. It's like usually a one syllable, always one syllable. And this word shas is the root of many words that are important for us. One of the most important is shastra. Shastra is that which you are meant to be controlled by. Shas means to control. The shishya agrees to be controlled by the guru. That's what surrender means. You are my master, whatever you say, I'll do. And that's really surrender. If you're not going to be controlled by the spiritual master, by being a shishya and abiding by the shastra, then you'll be controlled by the shastra, the weapon of time. You know, you'll be cut down. Father Time, he has that weapon, right? So shishya, shastra, and shastra, they all have the same root here. And we should, you know, try to agree to be controlled by the spiritual master. Because it's a loving control. We're going to be controlled. We're already controlled at every moment. Our bodies, you know, are a part of the material energy. Just the heart's beating and everything's going on. You know, we're at the mercy of the material energy. We can't fight it. So, if we try to enjoy this world, we'll be under the control of our material desires, under the control of our anger, under the control of our senses, you know. And they're not kind masters. They don't have our best interests at heart. So the best thing is to agree to be controlled by Krishna and his representatives who do have our best interests at heart. And ultimately that control is a control of love. It's the control that the mother has over the child. Out of love, she's controlling and chastising, pulling her there, feeding, washing, doing everything else. So that's our choice. You know, we're going to be controlled by the three modes of nature, or we're going to be controlled by Krishna's words. And if we agree to be controlled by Krishna's words, then Maya releases us, you know. Then even though, yes, we're in the material world and there's going to be these difficulties, we will take it in a different way, you know. We won't be freaked out by these things. If all of your energy and all of your desire and all of your hopes are placed in the material energy, you know, then you're, you know, taking shelter of a stone boat. You're going to be disappointed. You're going to be overwhelmed with lamentation. Because you will fail life after life. But if your hopes and your aspirations and your attention is placed on Krishna's lotus feet, you will ultimately be victorious and ultimately be nicely protected. Yoga kshema bahamiham. Krishna says, I personally carry what you need. Your protection, your necessities will be provided by me. So we have to have that faith. Arjuna has it now. and you will be enlightened by these words.
There's just one sentence here which says, foolish mundane callers explain that one need not submit to Krishna as a person, but to be unborn within Krishna. What is...
As I said at the end of the purport, you have to know some of the history. There's a Gita, which I have bought from because of my work as an editor, that was written before this Gita by Dr. Radhakrishnan, I believe, who was in the government. He was like a vice president or something.
He
was one of the presidents.
He was not the president.
First president.
No, first one was Rajendra Prasad. He was the second president.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was a teacher, which is why we celebrate.
Right. So he had a place of prominence. He wrote a Bhagavad Gita. And just to, some interesting history. We have a little time. So when Prabhupada was, before he came to America, he had already retired. He wasn't a sannyasi yet, I believe. And he was working with the Gaudiya Math. He made a great effort to work with the Gaudiya Math. This was his spiritual master's institution. And, they were all God brothers. So at one point, he actually helped to run an ashram for one of his God brothers. I forget which one. And so he was, guiding the brahmacharis, and they would go out and preach and everything. So one of the brahmacharis went out, and I think he saw this Dr. Radhakrishnan speak, and he was giving the same commentary to 934. The 934 is Manmanabhava Madhbhakta, And surrender unto me, think of me, bow down to me, surrender. So in the commentary there, and I have it, I can bring the book if you're interested. He says, ultimately, this verse doesn't mean that one has to surrender to the person Krishna, but to the unborn, eternal, unlimited within Krishna. And, this is like anathema to a devotee. There's no internal and outside. Deha Deha Vibhago Yam Neshude Vijite Kuchit. There's a verse about it. Deha Deha Vibhago means division between the body and the self. We have division. Dehi no sminyada dehe. That the soul is in the body. The body ages and dies in the soul state. But there's nothing like that for Krishna. So dehi deha, a deha dehi vibhago yam, na ishwade vidyade kuchit. Not at any time should one try to understand that there's a difference between the deha and the dehi for the ishwara, for the Lord. There's a verse like it. So, but he was making a difference. That somehow there's a difference between Krishna the person and the unborn eternal within Krishna. This is gross ignorance. It's impersonalism, basically. So Prabhupada, he wrote a whole essay on this. And this was in Hindi, I believe. And it was later translated by Bhakti Chiru Swami. It may have been written in Bengali. And it became part of the book. If you want to read this, he's actually quoting page numbers in the book, which I then verified. It's not just this one thing. He really goes to town and he has a whole argument and he defeats this thing. And because this is, he had a lot of influence. This is one of the reasons Prabhupada wrote the Bhagavad Gita. You read the intro and the preface to this Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada says, a lady approached me, this is probably after he came in 1965, and, he's talking, and not Radhakrishnan, but Dr. Mishra. He didn't have the same prominence. But the same idea was there. And this lady approached me and said, could you recommend the Gita? And he said, frankly, I couldn't, because there's no Gita that really gives it as it is, And because you're going to find Dr. Radhakrishnan's Gita or different, the Penguin Gita, this Gita, that Gita, they're all wrong. They're all not giving it as it is, because they're not given by devotees. Krishna says, that bhakti mama bijanati yavanjastami tatvata. I can be understood as I am in truth only by bhakti. So if a non-bhakta or an avaishnav is writing a commentary, he's going to be misguiding people in the name of the Gita. So this is, this is an impetus for Prabhupada to work hard on presenting the Gita as it is. So that's what it's all about. This is, and it comes up again in 934. If you read 934, you'll see another, he goes into more detail on this. So we should never, Anyway, so that's that. And we can do one more. Yeah, that's a short, it's a short purport. Anyway, let's go through this purport. We'll save 8 for tomorrow. Let's see. The analogy of the forest fire is good to remember. Of course we have arsonists who start forest fires, but forest fires often start on their own through lightning, or the wind moves the bamboo or something like that. And similarly, you know, we don't want trouble in our life. We do everything we can to avoid it, but it happens automatically. You know, you can't avoid it. Now, there's also an argument for this. You know, part of this idea is that just as, you know, trouble comes unwanted, so your happiness will come unwanted, you know, if you don't try for it. No one tries for disease, but it comes. So if that comes, your happiness will come too. It's already programmed in by your previous activity. Now, I always took this to mean that it doesn't necessarily mean that how much money you're going to have or how much wealth. Because happiness is, you know, you can be wealthy and miserable and you can be poor and happy. It's actually the quantity of material happiness that you feel, you know, whether you're poor or rich or whatever. And that's already programmed in. It's a famous verse from Narada speaking to Vyas, where he says, what is it? Tasya vaheto prayate te kovido na labhyate yad pramatama paryada. He says, therefore, the wise person should try for that goal that you cannot achieve in this material world, from going to the highest planet down to the lowest. Because, paryada, ta labhyate dukha vadanya taksukam, kale na sarvata gabhira rangasa. So this gabhira rangasa is the secret, the kind of the hidden force of time and karma, but that is unstoppable. Rangasa means very powerful. Gabhira means hidden. You know, that's moving us this way and that way. You know, someone walks across the street. You know, 1,000 people walk across the street is fine. The 1,001st person walks the street gets hit by a car. Why me? Oh, if only they didn't go to the store that day, it wouldn't happen. But they were destined to do that. We're being moved around. And so he's saying here, just as the dukkha comes, the sukha will also come by this. And therefore, don't spend your whole life trying to avoid the dukkha and maximize the sukha. They're already plugged in. Strive for that which you can attain. Strive for Krishna. You know, that's a worthy object for your aspiration. And if you can achieve that, then you'll get away from all of this duality. No more material sukha and dukkha. You'll be immersed in Ananda forever. You know, there's no dualities in the spiritual world. Here, there's always the positive and the negative. Even Brahma, you know, has to eventually leave his body. He's also in anxiety. So that's the forest fire. It happens, and no one wants it, yet it takes place. Then we become perplexed. So this is the world of the... Now, this thing from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it's a nice little prose passage here. That, you know, don't be a miser. This verse that we learned, you know, it's very nice. Is what is it? No. It's labdva sudurlabham idam bahusambhavante manushim artadam anityapiya dhira. We have to be dhira. We have to come to the point of dhira. You know, that's actually Krishna's instructions begin with that. Nam yam hi na padyante te purusham purushar shubha samadukha sukham dhiram somitatvaya kalpate. He says, Arjuna, look, you're going back and forth according to your material calculation of who you like and who you don't like and your material relationships. But you have to tolerate, you know, just being in this world, the senses are going to put, you know, happiness and distress, heat and cold, they come and go. You have to tolerate. And one who is eligible for liberation is one who can tolerate. He's a dhira. Dhira means that you remain calm even in, you know, the difficulty. You remain sober-minded. And you know, you raise to a higher plane. So one who is dhira in this verse, he realizes the value of the human form of life after we've attained to so many births. You know, it's such a rare thing. You know, 8,400,000 species, only 400,000 human beings. How many of those human beings are more or less living like animals? You know, you know, the count. Yeah, there's 8,400,000 species, but how many insects are there? There's trillions of them. There's only like a couple of billion of us human beings. You see how rare it is. So he says, labdva sudurlabhamidam, difficult to attain, bahusambhavande manushyam, artadam. It's the form of human life that can give the ultimate goal, the arta, swarta, which is Vishnu. You know, is Krishna. But it's temporary. Time is ticking. Don't waste time. So therefore he says, tunam, yateta, immediately strive. For the Nikshreya, said the same word that Arjuna used. Ultimate good. Because after all, anumrityu, this body is subject to death at any time. So as long as it hasn't fallen down, napadet, in death, therefore strive for this nikshreyasa, because you've already experienced all this vishaya kolosarvataksya. The vishaya is available in every form of life. You've already done it all. Why, you know, punok punashcharvatacharvanam? Why keep chewing the chewed? You know, it's foolishness. So that's the same idea with this quote from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the miser. Don't be a miser. Don't waste this valuable form of life. Strive for Krishna consciousness and make a solution to everything. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Hare Bol.